listeners, you've tuned in to A.E. Reads Skiffily, the only podcast featuring me, A.E., reading science fiction stories with added sound effects. This podcast taps into the imagination of readers and listeners everywhere. Episode 20 story is Laying the Ghost by Eric Brown, which was originally published in the October 2010 issue of Clark's World magazine. It's set in space. So, let's get to it. Sit back, turn up the volume, and seep in the power of audio fiction.
We were winding down after coming in from Aldebaran with a haul of starship wreckage. I'd sold the scrap en route and left it in geosync orbit above Constance, Altair 3, for the merchant to collect. The funds were already in my account, and I was treating Ella and Carrie to a meal and a few drinks. A pianist was improvising Lyran mood music, and the ceiling pulsed with images of Jovian superstorms. Across the spaceport, starships were phasing into and out of the void in eerie silence. While Ella was at the bar, Carrie leaned over to me.
For an AI, you know, Ella's almost, well, human.
She's running on a self-aware paradigm, Carrie. That paradigm is human. She has all the emotional capacity of you and me. As far as I'm concerned, she's our equal. What?
Talking about emotional capacity, Ed, have you ever considered your own?
Mine?
Have you heard of the expression, a cold fish?
You can know someone for years. In this case, almost 10, and still be amazed at how they view you.
Me? What on earth makes you think that?
She enumerated her argument with calloused fingers.
One, you never talk. I mean about things that matter. Your feelings, your emotions. You never allow people into your head.
Oh, you wouldn't want to go there. It's full of day-to-day rubbish. Nothing deep going on in there.
You see, there you go again. Trivializing what is important. Two, you never talk about your past, what's affected you. Three, you rarely speak about the future, what you want, other than the next big haul.
And what's wrong with talking about the next big haul?
Psh. I was glad to see that Ella was returning with a tray of drinks. As she slinked through the crowd, I noticed a few men and women covertly eyeing her slim body.
Sir, thank you.
She slipped into the booth, smiling at me. Carrie took her drink.
What do you think, Ella?
Oh, God.
About what, Carrie?
About Ed. Do you think he has deficient emotional capacity?
Ella looked from Carrie to me, her expression serious.
I think his emotional capacity is far from deficient. What is deficient is his ability to express, to show those emotions. I suspect some past trauma is inhibiting him in this respect. Maybe you will tell us about it one day, Ed?
Carrie was smirking at this turn in the conversation.
Well, thanks. Here I was, enjoying a quiet drink with my crewmates, when everything gets suddenly psychoanalytical. Listen, there's nothing wrong with me, emotionally or otherwise. I have no hang-ups, no inhibitions. I'm happy Ed the Salvageman. Anyway, here's to many another successful haul.
Around then I noticed the figure in the Orion Warwear spacesuit. It was moving from group to group of drinkers, talking to them briefly, then moving on. From the dismissive gestures of the people spoken to, I received the impression that whoever was in the suit was asking for something and being turned down. A minute later, the figure perched itself on a stool at the opening of the booth and stared in at us. I say stared, but I only assumed that. The oval faceplate in its sleek silver helmet was as milky as opal. Its silver suit was streamlined and body-hugging, the surface swarming with millions of nanoware butts like iron filings in oil. From its shape, I guessed there was a woman in there.
What do you want?
I find myself in a difficult situation.
Its voice was feminine, but transistorized. For all I knew, the inhabitant of the suit might not even be human.
I need to leave Constance, but I cannot locate a ship heading in the direction I require.
Maybe you could find it if you took
And where's that?
The Chandra Sekar Stardrift.
That's quite a way away.
5,300 light years, give or take.
Carrie shook her head, derisive, and took a long swallow of beer. Where specifically in the star drift?
A planet called Saramion, Karen 2.
Saramion. Now where have I heard that name before?
Saramion, site of the war between human colonists and the native inhabitants of the Charon system. It was a particularly brutal and bloody conflict. The alien race known as the Kha, from the fifth planet of the system, invaded without provocation. Approximately 3 million humans lost their lives on Saramion.
Precisely 3,200,090. Let no lost soul go unmourned.
But why do you want to go to Saramion?
I have my reasons.
But won't it be dangerous? I mean, won't the Kha be hostile to human arrivals?
They allow a certain number of mourners and war historians to visit the shrines of Saramion every year.
I wondered which category she fell into. Well, it's a long way, and not where we were heading. The fare would be hefty. The opalescent faceplate turned to me.
That is the other slight problem. I am without the funds to finance the journey.
Carrie shuffled from the booth.
I'll be back at the ship, Ed.
She stood and hurried from the bar. The milky oval of the faceplate, behind which anything might be lurking, was still regarding me. A lack of funds is certainly a problem. I don't see how you could...
I see you bear the sigil of a salvage captain.
The figure pointed to my flight suit.
There is a small starship, a strike vessel, drifting in orbit around Saramion. It belongs to me. You may take it in recompense. If you agree to transport me there.
Ella?
What kind of strike vessel exactly?
A Corinthian Class 2.
Even badly damaged, it would fetch approximately 25,000 Altarian units on the open market.
Which would more than cover the cost of the return journey to the Chandra Sekar Star Drift. Of course, there was no way of telling if the being in the suit was telling the truth. Show me your face. On some internal command, the faceplate cleared. You're human. I stared at the pretty, impish face revealed. Dark, short hair, high cheekbones, a snub nose. She looked no older than 20. But why the suit? She shrugged, twisted her lips uncomfortably.
I have a certain condition. My immune system is dysfunctional.
She looked at me, hope evident in her big brown eyes.
Well?
What's your name?
Katerina. Katerina Roberti.
Well, Katerina, why don't you give me 5 minutes to discuss things with my co-pilot here? Katerina nodded, rose and strode across to the floor-to-ceiling view screen that looked out over the expanse of the spaceport. Reduced in the perspective, she looked tiny, vulnerable. Well, what do you think?
I think the situation is certainly odd. She is wearing an Orion warwear suit, which is even more expensive than a Corinthian. She could sell the suit, which would more than pay for her medical treatment. It would also pay for her return to Saramion.
You think she's lying about her condition?
That is certainly a possibility.
And about the Corinthian too?
Impossible to ascertain.
Mm-hmm. It'd be a risk.
I would like to know the reason she wishes to return to Saramion.
My guess is she fought in the war. She wishes to return to lay ghosts, to revisit old battlefields.
Maybe.
Well, perhaps we'll find out along the way. Ella fixed me with one of her impassive stares.
You will agree to take her?
Mm-hmm. I looked across the lounge to the suited figure. Katerina had turned and was watching us. I signaled her over. She came hesitantly, almost wincing. I held out my hand. We're phased out in 5 hours.
Oh, thank you.
Her expression behind the faceplate was joyous. Carrie took a while to simmer down, even when I told her about the Corinthian.
But you know nothing about her, who she is, what she is. She's striding around here in that damned war suit. You realize how powerful those things are?
We were a day out of Altair 3, sailing through the marmorial realm of void space, 2 days from the Chandrasekhar star drift.
Why did you agree, Ed?
She's young, vulnerable. Everyone else back there had turned her down.
I just don't believe you.
What did you say back at the port? That I didn't show my emotions? Well, I'm showing them now. I feel sorry for the kid. And I want to help her.
This has nothing to do with your emotions, Ed. And all to do with your male biology.
Bullshit, Carrie. Ella chose that moment to slip through the hatch and cross the flat deck. She eased into a sling with a smile at me.
For two people who have been in each other's company for almost 10 years, you spend a lot of time in altercations.
That's what 10 years of being banged up with a sarcastic, sour-faced cynic like Carrie does to you.
And fuck you,
too. Anyway, the drives are functioning at 98% efficiency. The smart core reports no problems, and mechanically, all aboard the ship is running smoothly.
And you'd know about that, girl.
If Ella heard Carrie muttering under her breath, she chose to turn the other cheek. Have you had a chance to talk to Katerina?
Yes, I took her on a tour of the ship.
Learn anything?
Very little. She says she was born and brought up on Saramion, but when I asked about the war and whether she fought in it, she clammed up.
Do you know much about Saramion?
My cache has an extensive file on the planet. Settled by humans over 2 centuries ago, a pastoral place of vast agricultural concerns, 1 million villages considered by the rest of the expansion to be technologically backward. It was settled by a breakaway faction of the Amish community of Mars. The attack by the neighboring Ha came out of the blue.
And no one has ever found out why the aliens invaded?
A motive was never discovered. That's what rankles with the survivors to this day, as well as the terrible loss.
She stared through the viewscreen at the gray void. I think I'll go talk to Katerina.
You'll have difficulty getting that suit off her, if that's what you're thinking about. Seems she's welded to the damn thing.
I bit my tongue and pulled myself through the hatch. What the fuck is her problem?
You should heed your criticism of Ed. He is, after all, biologically impelled by male drives.
And I thought Della was on my side. I found Katerina in the observation lounge. She was seated before the great curving view screen, staring into the void. She had the cowed aspect of a devotee at a temple, a worshipper in a cathedral of the infinite. Do you mind?
No, please, be my guest.
I sat down at the foam form beside her and saw that her faceplate was once again blank. I stared at a sleek silver suit, wondering at its power. Ella told me she'd shown you around the ship.
She gave me a guided tour. She's an AI, isn't she?
Yes, but one running on a self-aware paradigm. She turned her faceless faceplate to me.
Does that make her human?
I smiled.
I honestly don't know.
It does make her a sentient being. And my equal. That's what matters to me.
I see. Will you apologize to Ella for me, Ed?
What for?
For my inability to talk to her openly. She wanted to talk, I sensed, but I was unable to respond.
Because she wasn't human? Instead of replying, she retuned her gaze to the infinite.
Do you believe in vitalism, Ed? The idea that living organisms...
I know what vitalism means.
Well?
I don't know. Perhaps once I did. It's a nice idea, after all, to think that humans are imbued with a special God-given light of fire, vitality, soul.
Perhaps once, but no longer?
Then I met Ella, and I had to rearrange my thinking a little.
So you think that life can exist without that vitality?
Look at Ella.
Yes, but is Ella truly alive?
I was out of my depth and uncomfortable. What about you? Do you believe in vitalism?
Oh, I know vitalism is real.
I nodded. Ella had informed me that the Saramayan colony had been religious.
A god who punished the bad and rewarded the good. We were a peaceful people. We practiced nonviolence, living within our means, at one and in harmony with our environment, our world. We knew how lucky, how God-blessed we were in settling on Saramayan, and we gave thanks.
Beyond the view screen, the grey void swirled. There were times when I thought I discerned patterns in the marmoreal streaks in the infinite, and others when I knew that the void was purely random and chaotic.
I was brought up on a big farm run by my parents. I had four older brothers. They treated me like a princess. We worked hard and worshipped daily, and life was bountiful and good. We knew our neighbors and trusted them. They were like us. I never really apprehended that there was an outside world, another way of doing things. Even when I graduated from school and attended college, all the world was one belief, one way of doing things. And then...
And then the Kha attacked.
I was on holiday with friends at the time. We were in a resort on an island far to the south. This saved my life. We were aware that something terrible had happened. The firestorms in the atmosphere, the explosions. We saw their attack ships in the distance. When we returned to the mainland...
I reached out and laid my big hand over her small, cold silver mitt.
Devastation. Destruction. All the cities, every one of them, all the small towns, destroyed. Firebombed and worse. They used weapons we didn't even understand. Reducing people and places to dust. We never stood a chance. We didn't even have an army. I returned home, or to what was left of it, and I found my parents, my four brothers. They were dust, Ed. With just scraps of clothing here and there to identify them.
I lit a respectful and
how did you get off planet?
A Federation ship had monitored the attack and sent rescue rafts. All told, just 7,000 of us survived. A few thousand of us decided to fight back. Our rage, our grief overcame our Pacific instincts, our long-held beliefs. We had assets lodged in banks across the expansion, and we bought attack ships. And
she raised her hand.
And state-of-the-art warware. And we returned to Saramayan and fought the Kha.
What happened?
We lost.
Seconds, then minutes elapsed. We were alone with our separate thoughts as we stared into the void.
And vitalism? Your certainty?
I know it's real, Ed, because of what happened to me in orbit around my home planet.
And she left it at that, and hung her helmeted head.
What happened, Katerina?
She just shook her head silently. I squeezed her gloved hand and thought it wise to leave her to her memories. I returned to the flight deck and was relieved to see that Carrie was not there. Ella hung in her sling, her head flung back, the whites of her eyes showing. She sensed my presence and came back from whichever cyber realm she'd been inhabiting.
I was integrating with the ship's smartware, Korag.
I smiled to myself, wondering at the process which allowed her to commune with my ship's logic matrix.
I've been talking to Katerina. She told me what happened on Ceramion. The Kha attacked her homeworld, killed just about everyone. She and a few thousand survivors tried to fight back, but they lost.
Which makes me all the more curious as to why she wishes to return there.
No. Nuh-uh. When I was young, my sister died. That's another story. I don't want to talk about it now.
What do you want to talk about?
I then found myself reaching out and taking Ella's hand. It was small, warm, and very human. I held it tight. She stared at me with her big brown eyes.
After it happened, I found myself drawn back to the place where Maria died. I was compelled. I couldn't explain why. It was the place where she'd last been alive. Perhaps that was it. Perhaps I thought I might commune with whatever of her remained. Silly, I know, but anyway, I had to go back. And you know something? When I did, when I went back and stood on that spot and thought of my sister and the silly accident that robbed her of her life, and when I cried, well, I felt a lot better for doing so. Perhaps that's why Katerina's going back. Can you understand that?
I squeezed her hand. She returned my gaze with her lustrous eyes.
Yes, Ed. Yes, I understand perfectly.
One 1,000 Kha sentinels, grey and monolithic, and as vast as 10 city blocks, hung in space around the defeated planet of Ceramion. My ship's smartware core pinged me.
Kha AIs have established contact, Ed. They wish to know the purpose of our visit.
Tell them that we're here to pay our respects to the human dead, and we seek clearance to land on Ceramion.
We ease to a halt beside one of the sheer grey monoliths and waited. Framed within the girdle of sentinels, the planet tilted 10 degrees off its polar axis, blue and white and twice the size of Earth.
It's beautiful.
I'm not looking forward to finding out what might be down there. If the Kha let us through, that is.
Carrie joined us on the flight deck and eased herself into a sling.
So our passenger proved the security risk you mentioned?
No, but there's something seriously wrong with the girl.
What?
Have you noticed she doesn't eat? It's been 3 days since leaving Constance, and I've taken 6 trays of food to her berth. She hasn't touched a thing.
So? The girl wasn't hungry. She's returning to the place where her family, her people were massacred after all.
There is something else that doesn't quite ring true. Physically, Katerina appears to be 20, 25 years old.
Go on.
I've been double-checking the records. The Kha attacked Ceramion 25 years ago.
I stared down at the slowly rotating planet. I recalled Katerina's youthful, elfish face within her helmet.
Seems to me like the girl's been lying to us, Ed.
Ella, why do you think she would...
Clearance granted. The Ka have issued a 2-day pass. We must be out of Saramayan airspace within 48 hours.
Minutes later, Katerina joined us on the flat deck. She stood between Marsling and Ellis and stared through the view screen at her home planet. She'd cleared her faceplate, and her youthful face stared out, her eyes wide in wonder.
I have the coordinates for the Corinthian. 37.93 degrees north, 22.93 degrees east, orbiting at 36,000 kilometers.
We eased past the Sentinel. I was glad to leave the cold, inhuman monolith in our wake.
Look, down there.
Through the view screen, we made out the becalmed wreck of the Corinthian, nose down in relation to the planet, ragged holes puncturing its fuselage.
And you survived that?
I wish I hadn't.
Okay, Ella. Store those coordinates and we'll track to beam the Corinthian on the way out. Now, Katerina, where do you want us to land? We were drifting slowly over the planet's vast southern continent. Ruined villages and townships punctuated the green continuity of the veldt. Roads and rivers threaded the landscape, but nothing moved down there. Absolute stillness greeted our gaze, and I could not help but think of the planet as a cemetery without gravestones.
No one has ever seen the Ka. They have had no contact with the human expansion and do not allow visitors to their home planet. When they struck Saramayan, they did so from altitude. Later, when we returned and engaged them in battle, we saw their ships but never the Ka themselves. The few Ka vessels we managed to destroy exploded in space, so no alien remains were ever discovered. Some say the Ka resemble devils. Others maintain they are insectoid. To me, it doesn't matter. The very sound of their name conjures absolute evil.
We floated towards the planet's equator, where Katerina's family had farmed land. Veldt turned to rainforest, a vast tangle of alien vines and great gnarled crimson trees. And then the rainforest gave way to a range of purple mountains that ran parallel to a great rift valley. Between these geographic features stretched a plain of fertile land that was Katerina's birthplace.
Look, down there.
Something squatted on the plain. Bring us down slowly. Ella eased the ship to within 100 meters of the thing.
Could it be a Ka?
We hung in the air, observing. I could not tell whether it was mechanical or biological. 20 meters long, perhaps 10 high, it was armor-plated with what looked like matte black chitin, domed and segmented and squatting on the ground as if devouring prey. From what I guessed was its head section, or what might have been its control center, a long proboscis or drill punctured the soil. Whether a Ka or one of their creations, its act was symbolic of the rape of the planet. As we watched, it seemed to shiver with ecstasy, or maybe just mechanical vibration.
Sound?
Ella passed her hand over her controls. The deep ululation that filled the flat deck reminded me of the chanting of 1,000 monks, resonant and dolorous. Do you know whether it's alive or... Ella went rigid in her sling. Her eyeballs rolled to show only their whites as she attempted to communicate with the thing. She shook her head.
It's hard to tell. I sense a biological core, surrounded by extensive technological addenda.
We revered our planet. We loved the Earth. This thing is robbing its vitality.
I reached out to take a gloved hand, but she pulled away.
Get us away from here! I don't want to see or...
She turned from the view screen, holding her helmeted head in her hands. Ella sped us from the thing towards the Continental Rift Valley. 1 hour later, we came down on a plain of lush grassland beside the escarpment. 100 meters before the ship was the outline of farm buildings, and beyond them, the geometric pattern of fields, their crops gone wild long ago.
I would like a few minutes by myself, Ed. Ben, would you come and join me? I have a lot I must explain.
Of course. Katerina moved from the flight deck. Minutes later, her tiny figure emerged from the shadow of the ship, moving past the ruins of the farmhouse towards the edge of the escarpment. She stood with her arms on her hips and stared about her. In silence, we watched. After a minute, she moved towards a lone tree that grew at an angle, leaning out over the rift valley. It was similar to those I had seen in the rainforest, crimson and contorted with a vast, spreading leaf canopy. She found a place in its gnarled root system and sat down, staring out across the abyss. Like this, very still, she remained for perhaps 15 minutes. At length, she turned and raised a hand, and I took this as a summons. Ella and Carrie said nothing as I left the flight deck and climbed down to the airlock. I cycled myself through and stepped out onto the soil of Ceramion. The first thing I noticed was the scent, a heady, spicy mix of soil and flower blooms. The grass was embroidered with a spread of tiny yellow flowers which gave off an almost overpowering perfume as I strode from the ship towards where Katerina sat. At one point, I paused and looked back. Ella and Carrie stood before the view screen, gazing down at me like figures in an aquarium. I passed into the shade of the great leaning tree and picked my way through the knuckled roots until I came to the girl. I sat down beside her.
It's a beautiful world.
She turned to me. Her youthful face showed behind her faceplate, and she smiled.
It was even more beautiful before they attacked.
I looked away and then saw, standing among the raised roots on the edge of the escarpment, 6 simple wooden crosses. She saw the direction of my gaze.
We had a custom on Ceramion. We buried our dead beside trees, and this was my parents' favorite place on the planet. At sunset, they would come out here with a drink and just sit and admire the view.
The silence stretched. A gentle, warm wind picked up the scent of the flowers and swamped us.
After the attack, I drove back here from the southern coast, passing devastated towns and knowing what I would find. The farm was destroyed, looking much as it does now. I found no personal possessions, no mementos. Perhaps that was a good thing. To have found objects that belonged to my mother and father and my brothers, that would have been too much. Now, I would like something to remind me. Is that silly?
Not at all.
I found what was left of my family. Or perhaps I was kidding myself. I found scraps of clothing and dust and scooped it up and carried it over here and buried it beside the tree. Then planted wooden crosses I made from what remained of the farmhouse. I even said prayers and then vowed to get my revenge. I don't know whether it was hours or days before I was found by a rescue fairy and taken to the nearest human colony world. Anyway, 2 years later, I did come back, in this suit, in the Corinthian, and I did exact a futile, limited form of revenge. I destroyed 2 Ha craft, and then a Ha fighter struck and disabled the Corinthian and left me for dead. A rescue vessel picked me up, took me back to the colony world.
She gazed down at the forlorn row of crosses. From this angle, I could not see her face.
I said I had a lot to explain.
Katerina, the attack happened 25 years ago, and yet your face is that of a woman of 20. You never eat, never open your suit.
She turned her helmet and looked at me. Behind the faceplate, I could see silver tears tracking down her cheeks. She raised a gloved hand and stared at it.
These suits were the latest Orion warwear. They were made to help a fighter fight, augmented with an integrated AI to boost physical reaction time, mental acuity. Do you know why I came here, Ed?
To pay respects, to lay the ghost.
That's good. I like that. Yes, to lay the ghost. I came to this gravesite to bury myself.
She lifted her gloves to her helmet and touched a control at the neck. The helmet opened slowly, folding out in sections, blooming like a flower. At some point in the process, the hologram showing her youthful face flickered off, and I stared, unable to believe what I was seeing. A skull sat askew on the notched column of her vertebrae, grinning out at me. It was all I could do not to back away in shock. I almost retched.
These are fighting suits, Ed. And they go on fighting when the fighter within them is technically dead. Shrapnel punctured an elbow seal in the suit when my Corinthian was attacked, and I died of asphyxiation. I was cerebrally integrated with the suit's AI, and it uploaded my memories into its operating system. And I would have gone on fighting if the Corinthian had been capable.
Oh, Christ.
For 2 days after the attack, when I was rescued and taken back to the colony world, I thought I'd managed somehow to survive. And then a medic broke it to me and opened my suit, and...
Her gloved hand lifted, indicated the grinning skull.
You cannot begin to imagine the shock, Ed. The terror.
I could only shake my head and bite my lips in an effort to stem my tears. I stared at the lopsided skull, and it stared back at me. Its orbits huge and shadowy. I wanted to get to my feet and run, but my legs felt weak, and bile rose, acid in my throat.
I told you that I believe in vitalism, in the soul, because of what had happened to me. I am less than human now, a mere mechanical set of stored memories and emotions.
She reached up, took her skull in her gloved hands and lifted it from her spine. She lowered the skull to her lap, where it sat, gazing blindly out across the abyss.
The terrible, terrible thing is, Ed, that in my heart, or whatever passes for my heart now, I know that vitalism is a fact, because now I am reduced.
She touched the chest of her suit, and slowly its torso opened, 2 flanges hinging outwards to reveal a chaotic jackstraw assemblage of bones within.
She leaned forward over the skull in her lap and with both hands scooped a hollow in the fine earth before the closest cross. I watched, appalled yet fascinated, as she placed her skull in the grave, then reached into the cavity of her chest and one by one withdrew her bones. She raised her right arm and her ulna and radius, then her smaller metacarpal bones rattled into the suit's torso. She did the same with her left arm and collected the bones and laid them reverently in the grave. Next, she split a seam in her legs and withdrew the femur and tibia from her right leg, along with the smaller bones, and then the left. And I closed my eyes and wept. When I looked again, she was covering the bones with soil to create a small, compact mound. She turned her suit to face me.
Humans are far more than mechanistic machines. I know this because of what I am now. Although I have the memories of what happened, I do not have the ability to feel real emotion, to grieve.
I wanted to tell her that she could be upgraded, that AIs had developed so much over the past 25 years. I wanted to tell her that she could be made human.
I had a lover, a young man who fought alongside me and survived. While I was in hospital, he came to see me. I had just been told what I had become, and I showed him. Ed, the look on his face, the horror before he fled. But for all I could intellectually appreciate what he might be feeling, I could not find it within me to empathize. And I felt nothing.
The sun was setting behind the far horizon, laying down gorgeous laminates of tangerines and pinks. Far below us, shadows turned the abyss into a dark, inky pit. The silence stretched, and I could find not one word to comfort her.
I came here to bury myself. And I came here also to die.
And she reached into the cavity of her chest and pulled out two slim columns. She held them up before me.
The suit's energy system. Without them, the suit will run down in hours.
Katarina.
It's what I want. Peace at last. I can't feel grief. I can't feel sadness or pain, or joy or happiness or love. All I have is the memories of these emotions. Now is the time I have dreamed of for so long. To die, here.
She took the silver columns, drew back her arm, and flung them into the rift. I watched them sail through the air, end over end, catching the dying sunlight as they fell. She hunched forward, hands upturned in her lap. Her open helmet bowed as if in supplication.
I can feel myself slowing down already, Ed. And it's wonderful.
Katarina, I'll stay.
No. Please go. And say to Ella, tell her that I'm sorry. So sorry.
Goodbye, Katarina. She failed to respond, and I reached out and took her gloved hand for one last time, then stood and made my way through the root system of the great tree towards the ship. I stopped once and looked back, but the woman who had been Katarina Reverti was now no more than an empty Orion warwear suit, seated on the edge of an abyss. Carrie stepped out of the ship's hatch and faced me. Her eyes were hard, questioning, and I knew I could not bring myself to describe what had happened yet. I hurried past her and stopped before the hatch. Ella had appeared and was watching me. Her expression was unreadable.
I listened, Ed. I heard what Katerina told you.
She reached out her arms towards me.
And I just want to say that I understand your pain.
At the sight of her standing there, so slight and vital and human, something broke within me. I stepped forward and took her in my arms and wept.
And that's the story.
I'm a robot that has feelings.
This episode doesn't have a discussion portion, maybe next time, so you can get back to work a little early today. Thank you for tuning in. Music and some of the sound effects were courtesy of Looperman, so props to them for providing that royalty-free. Be sure to follow the podcast on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, at Skiffily Podcast. That's S-K-I-F-F-I-L-Y. It's like an adverb. This episode's readers are Chrissy, Joanna, and Ashley R. Carlson. Chrissy, where can listeners find you online?
You can find me on Instagram at Chrissy's Curious. That's spelled C-R-I-S-S-Y-S, Curious.
And Ashley R. Carlson?
You can find me online at my website, www.ashleyrcarlson.com. And I also have an Instagram that I rarely post on, which is also Ashley R. Carlson. I also have a Twitter that I rarely post on. Ashley R. Carlson 1, I think. So I'm not really big into social media, but the best way to get in contact with me is going to be on my website with either the contact page or sending me an email. My email address is ashleyrcarlson13@gmail.com.
All right.
Thanks. Great.
Let us know what you think of the show. And if you have ideas for the podcast or just want to show some love, feel free to message me. And don't think that I'm too good to hear from anyone. You can also support the podcast on Patreon. Patrons get access to exclusive posts and scripts, participate in community discussions and polls, and even get personalized readings. You can find more info in the show notes. If you can't support the podcast financially, that's totally cool. You can still help out by leaving positive reviews on iTunes, Google Play, Podomatic, Stitcher, or wherever it is you subscribe to podcasts. That will let other people know about A.E. Read Skiffily, and you can help them discover this great science fiction podcast that I know you love. Thank you again for listening, and be sure to tune in next time for episode 21.